Welcome to Through the Ringer. I'm your host, Tate Frazier. We are live, boots on the ground in Phoenix. Myself, Kevin O'Connor, we just watched the national championship game. Welcome into Through the Ringer. KOC, you're sitting next to me. We just got out of the stadium. It took about an hour. How you holding up? Have you lost your mind? I was close.
I mean, I'm feeling good, Tate. I'm ready to talk basketball, a little NBA as well later on. A lot to discuss.
Typically, we talk trends. We're going to get to the trends, but just some, you know, kind of news and notes from this game. First back-to-back champion in 17 years, the last time we saw that, Chicago Bulls head coach Billy Donovan back at Florida, of course, and then UConn now is 6-0. Put up your sixes right now like Michael Jordan. 6-0 in national championship games. Let's start there. You're an NBA guy, Kevin, but when you hear that a team that has gone to the national championship game six times has never lost, you say all-timer, right? Are you saying blue blood? Like, I mean, how do you feel about the UConn Huskies?
I mean, you also have to consider the great success of the women's team as well, and looking at what is arguably the greatest, you know, basketball organization in college this century, right? I mean, I think there's other programs close to on par, but they're one of the two or three best in the men's side. What they have done these last 2 years, I mean, it's interesting on social media, people talking about how this is during the portal era and the transfers and all that.
Yeah.
Doing it now. But the fact is that they won every single game the past 2 years in the tournament by double digits. They are a truly dominant team. They lost guys from last year's team.
Rebuilt. Three NBA guys from last year and the most outstanding player.
And they rebuilt and they did it again and once again, absolute dominant fashion.
Well, let's talk about trends in this game. Let's get to the actual game itself. It was a game in the first half. Purdue did their best. Zach Edey had this kind of just juiced moment for like a couple sequences back and forth where you're like, oh, now my eyebrows are raised.
Is he going to do this?
Yeah.
I was sitting there like, oh my God, he might actually do it.
Let's talk about that, just the wow factor of Edey. Like, this is probably, and I talked about this a little bit during the game, but the activity level of Edey was at an all-time high.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he came out of the gates that first 8-10 minute stretch. He was unbelievable. On defense, he was a complete deterrent, blocking shots around the rim. Offensively, he looked like, he looked like Shaquille O'Neal at times. Clinging early in the game, it felt like he was a bit overwhelmed by Edey's size. But, you know, ultimately, despite a little bit of foul trouble for Clinging, I thought he got better as the game went on. I'm curious, you know, how much of that do you think was fatigue for Edey? Mm-hmm. How much of that was, you know, just Clinging learning him? Because Clinging's a great defensive player. We've seen his improvement. Might have been a little bit of both.
Yeah, I think Klingon's one of those guys where, you know, you are the big guy until you see a 7'4" guy in there.
300
the last pounds. Time I checked, Andrew Hurley and the scout team, they are not 7'4". So no matter what UConn was running, they were never going to see something. I mean, DJ Burns had this great moment where he just said, with all due respect, sir, you big as you know what. You know what I mean? Talking about Zach Edey. He's a big guy, and he looked good. But what does Zach Edey need to succeed? He needs threes around him. He needs the others to step up. In this game, here's a trend for you. Purdue's lack of threes. 1 of 7 from three. Braden Smith, 1 of 1. He's the only one that took a three and made a three in this game. Yeah, so what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, like, when's the last time that we see it? When will we see a team in the national title game take under 10 threes again? Right, I mean, like this might
especially when that's like kind of their calling card. They went from a team last year that cannot shoot the three. They put in this new drill. Matt Painter talked about that he learned from a coaching clinic. And this year they ended up being the most efficient team from the 3-point line. So they went from like bottom of the barrel to the best of the best. And then when they needed a moment to rely on being the best of the best, they weren't able to show up and get open shots.
Weird. It's like a strange strategic decision for the team, considering, like you said, their improvement from three this season. So for the Purdue side, I mean, like, I look at everything through an NBA draft lens, right? Like Edey, obviously, you look at their shot chart, everything's in the interior. He didn't have what he will need to have and will have for all 30 NBA teams. Like that's never going to happen in the league with a team that drafts Edey. But for him tonight in the national title game, in a way, I'm almost disappointed, surprised, shocked. I don't understand why Purdue would have gone in with that game plan. Also, have to credit some of UConn as well. Their perimeter defense, Castle, Newton, who did win most outstanding player, as you said. They, like, those guys do have something to do with that. But at the same time, when Edey, you know, is facing a double team, when, you know, Klingon's not in the game, it's just surprising that they weren't able to get some more open shots.
And typically what every team does with Purdue, because they look across and they say there's a 7'4" giant, we should probably double team him, Kevin. And when they do that, they make you pay. They kick it out to Mason Gillis, to Braden Smith, Fletcher Lawyer, Lance Jones, and they make you pay. In this game, it did feel like a conscious effort for Dan Hurley and UConn to say, no, we're going to let Zach Edey score 40 points tonight. Yeah. We're going to let him beat us, not the other guys. And that's literally what happened in this game to a T.
And the game plan worked out. It's like we talked about earlier, Klingon, it seemed like he was a bit overmatched early in the game. But by that second half, you watch those guys battle on the post for positioning. Edey wasn't quite getting to some of his preferred spots that he would have liked, because Klingon did a really good job moving him, holding him, making things hard on him, making him take some of those deep hook shots. Those are hard shots to make.
He made them early.
He did make them early, but like when you get a 7-foot guy on you with a long wingspan who's tough, it's hard to make those like over the course of a full game when you're not that close to the basket.
Yeah, it's tough. One other trend we want to hit here, UConn on the offensive glass, really just on the glass in general in this game. Cam Spencer comes to mind. When I think about the offensive end, it's like a missed shot. Cam Spencer created a second chance, and every single time UConn got a second chance, they don't miss much anyway when they're running their offense, but when they get a second chance, it feels like every single time it hit, and in this game, they delivered again on the offensive glass.
Caravan with 3 offensive boards, Newton with 3, Spencer with 2, Castle with 2, Klingon, their big guy, with only 1.
Mm.
But all those other starters just crashing the boards, making a difference on the offensive side. And you mentioned Cam Spencer. It's very interesting how they went to him so early in that game. We saw against Alabama last round, they left Castle open. They were willing to give Castle those open 3-point shots. UConn took it. Mm-hmm. Castle made him. They used Castle in different ways to get him going offensively when Alabama was kind of ignoring him. In this game, it was Spencer. They're running pick and roll with Spencer, letting him create, use his jumper to his advantage against that drop defense with Edey. Spencer, to me, I thought he had an outstanding game. The defensive energy, crashing the boards, the scoring ability, the decision making on offense. I was undecided with who was the right choice for most outstanding player. I think Klingon ultimately should have won it, with his defensive effort beyond the box score. And Castle would have been a strong choice, too. But all of those guys deserve to be on the all-tournament team.
Yeah. It's kind of funny with UConn. You could argue, any of those 5 starters had a place. I mean, even what Castle did in the first game, like you said, ended up with over 20 points there. Let's do some new kids on the block. We love doing this. And this was the battle of the bigs. We talked about the Giants going into this game. Zach Edey, let's give a moment to give him some credit. 37 points, 10 rebounds, 2 blocks in 39 minutes. This is all-time numbers in a national title game. I mean, Bill Walton and Kareem, only players with at least 35 points and 10 rebounds in a title game. So you're talking about rarefied air there. What did Zach Edey show you tonight, and what does that lead to at the next level?
I mean, I think Edey throughout this entire tournament, including tonight, did show his NBA upside. I understand some of the concerns people have about him, but I still think back to that block he had on Dalton Connect at the end of the Tennessee game, out stretching his arm against a really tough layup by Connect, blocking him. Some of the rim protection where he's just deterring guys with his size. Defensively, I thought he showed enough with his improvements over the years at Purdue that he can, in the right system, be that guy playing drop coverage, vacuuming every board that's available, deterring players from around the basket. Fit's going to matter with him.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, look, all due respect to Braden Smith, he had a good year. He had 7-plus assists per game under 3 turnovers. He's not an NBA-caliber point guard at a starting level. And I just think with Edey, when you pair him with one of the many, many great guards, almost every team has a good guard, a good shot creator in the NBA, he's going to get some of those easy shots rolling down the lane in the pick and roll that he just does not get for Purdue. He's playing a post game, and that's not going to be as much of a priority for him at the next level. I think he's going to be a solid player. I hope he's in the league a long time. I would love to see a 300-pound, 7-foot guy be, a 7-foot-4 right. guy be a great success for many years. I think at a minimum, he's going to be a solid to really good rotation guy, and hopefully much more than that if the fit's perfect.
Yeah, the one thing that you have to flag from the NBA eye, obviously you're watching a college game, so it's hard to do that. But one time in this game, I think actually a couple times, Samson Johnson, the backup big for UConn, is rolling as a lob threat. And you could tell Edey was a little bit in no man's land.
Yep.
And defensively, I think some of that will be the learning period, the growth period for him when he gets to the next level.
And that's where he's going to need help.
Right.
Like I think you pair him with somebody who can provide the help. You put him on the Heat, And then suddenly Bam Adebayo is in that help role, sort of like Brook Lopez and Giannis for the Bucks. Granted, their defense isn't so good right now. but I just think there's like some, you know, roles in recent years, Boston, Horford, and Porzingis, or in past years, Robert Williams and Horford, where you have two bigs out there. That's where Edie has that size. And Purdue doesn't necessarily have that size next to Edie to help in those situations where Johnson just gets a free roll to the basket.
Yeah, there was a Purdue fan in the crowd that just had a sign that said size matters, and it does. Klingon, on the flip side, another big here, 11 points, 5 rebounds, 1 block, 31 minutes. Like you said, a lot of stuff doesn't show up in the box score here, but he held his own against Zach Edey. I don't think he had a performance that's going to shoot him up to top 3, top 1. Some people thought he might be the number 1 pick. You're looking at me, maybe so, but what did you see from Klingon? What'd you like in this game?
I just love the box beyond the box score impact that he had. I think with him, like, you can
and look he's at, still not 100% healthy. At least that's what Dan Hurley keeps saying. I'm like, he looks pretty good out there.
Yeah, I mean, it looks pretty healthy to me. Yeah, it was terrific. I think with Klingon, he's shown enough throughout this turn to at least belong in the top 5-ish conversation. The thing is, with this year's draft class, all the teams that have top 10 odds, most of them already have a center. So with somebody like Klingon, you can look at certain teams and say, okay, this is the right fit for you. Like, if Memphis lands the number 2 pick or the number 3 pick, Memphis needs a center. Right. You pair Klingon with Jaren Jackson Jr. and what they have with Ja Morant on offense and Desmond Bane, suddenly, I think if you're the Grizzlies, maybe you have Klingon first on your board, but the Pistons will not. Or, you know, like a team like the Portland may not when you're already paying DeAndre Ayton. The Spurs, you could go either way. Pairing like Wemby with a center who doesn't shoot threes right now, you could argue either way. But I think there's certain teams that
not going to be good for Zach Collins if that happens. I mean, that's what he's doing right now.
Your boy.
My boy.
Former OSP guest.
Yeah, come on.
I think he's a goner.
Oh, no, no. But I like that both the bigs are in the mix, and I like that Edie seemed to take this matchup personally, which was good to see as well. All right, let's do some power rankings. KOC, every single week I bring you on, and you power rank things. This is your NBA big board power rankings right now as it stands. Is that what we're doing? This is your top 5, guys?
Let's do my updated top 5.
Updated top 5.
Updated top 5 here. I'm moving Stephon Castle to number 1.
Oh, my gosh.
For now.
For now.
For now.
The list is fluid. The list is always
The list
changing.
Is incredibly fluid. Okay. And I'll tell you what, Tate. I think
the only 5-star in this game, by the way.
Yeah, he was. I mean, Castle. I think Castle, look, he shot nearly 90% the second half of the season for UConn from the free throw line. He's got some touch near the basket with the floater range, some tough contested layups. I just have a feeling that this guy someday is going to figure it out. The reason why we're seeing Alabama and we're seeing Purdue and all these teams in the tournament not defend him from three is because you got to do something in order to have a chance at stopping this UConn offense. And so you're choosing the guy that's been a subpar three-point shooter throughout
his life.
That's
also a freshman.
And he's also a freshman. So you're thinking, oh, you're betting on the pressure aspect and all that. But I think he's shown how he can make a positive impact in so many different ways, even if he's not shooting. Castle is somebody that they've used him as a screener. He can roll to the basket. He can rebound. He can defend like crazy. He can finish at the basket. He's a smart player. He's a cutter. He's selfless. So, like, you look at...
Also a great defender. He guarded Mark Sears. Guarded Braden Smith tonight. And every single time he's guarding those guards, he is shutting them down.
Absolutely. And so you think about his size and his impact on the game across the board, aside from three-point shooting right now. I just think he's going to be just one of those guys who makes a positive impact on a winning team, regardless of the level that shot hits. But he's shown enough positive indicators throughout, you know, in high school and now his freshman year in college, that I think you get to feel good that he's at least going to reach a competent level at some point. And I saw a tweet earlier today, somebody comparing him to Boston's guards, Jrue Holiday, Derek White, and, you know, formerly Marcus Smart when he was in Boston. Just these types of guards who impact the game even when their shot's not falling. And to me, Castle's one of those guys where there's so many bigs that shoot threes now. Maybe Castle is your worst shooter on the floor, but I still think he can make an impact for your team. So for now, he's the number one pick, surpassing international player Alex Saar, who had an underwhelming year overseas. Still a tremendous defender. I'm keeping him at number
two. Big win for college basketball if you're keeping score right there. College basketball back at number one. Thank God. We love to see it. Bill, you have to watch now. Back at number one, baby.
Come on, Bill. Tune in. Saar's at two for now. Again, everything's very fluid. A lot of it's going to be dependent on how this board ends up shaking out on lottery night. I have Klingon at three.
Talked about another big one, right?
It just feels safe.
Okay.
Klingon's going to be a good
NBA player.
So
he's the best big in this draft.
The best big in this draft.
Zach Edey seemed to take that.
Unless, and then I have Saar. Saar's more of like a big forward.
Yeah, right.
You know, and then I have Topic, point guard from overseas at number four. He hasn't played since January. He's been out with injury, but he's a dynamic shot creator. 80% from the free throw line. Good indicator that he'll improve his 3-point shot.
If his name was Ryan Anderson, is he number four?
That's the question.
Okay.
Hey, no disrespect to Ryan Anderson.
I'm just saying the name. I mean, it's not even about the player.
Oh, then we got another cool name here, Miles Bouzelas from the G League.
I'm a fan.
Bouzelas, he almost went to Carolina.
I know. We wanted him.
Are you really?
We wanted Gigi Jackson and Bouzelas. It went sideways.
Oh, my. But Bouzelas, again, every player for the G League Ignite, they folded for a reason. The team was no good, not a great developmental situation. But I like Bouzelas. There's very few 6'10" guys that can create their shot off the dribble the way he can in this year's class. So he's inching his way up, back up the board after I had number one back in August.
Well, there you have it. Dan Hurley. Not only does he have his second national championship, now he has two top five picks. Mm-hmm. So the UConn Huskies, they're doing well right now when it comes to men's basketball, and they're having a fun time there in Storrs, Connecticut. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back with KOC, we're going to talk some NBA. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Through the Ringer. We're still here in Phoenix. We have not left yet. Myself, Kevin O'Connor. We are still reeling from the national championship game, but it is time to talk NBA. We are very excited to do that every single week here on Through the Ringer. We're going to do some Tuesday game previews with Kevin O'Connor, who's sitting right here. We'll start our Bucks. They're struggling right now. Woo. Celtics are going to Milwaukee. Bucks plus two in this game. The total is at 228, but we care more about the storylines and the matchups. KOC, what do you see in this game and what do we expect?
I mean, I'm thinking things are going to get worse for the Bucks here.
Oh, no.
For a little bit, Milwaukee looked like they were trending way up. Their defense, they were changing schemes every game. They were top 10 for a 3-4 week stretch, and now they are in a position where team meetings and Doc is throwing the team, bus driver under the bus.
Right.
You know?
Turns out Giannis was right about the equipment manager. He needed everybody to show up. And Doc's saying that they're just not a professional operation. I mean, it's a lot of shots coming from the top.
In fact, he still is a top five MVP candidate. It's starting to look like the Bucks are a team that you're selling on right now.
And do you think that if you are the Bucks, like, you can run it back next year, or do things change drastically? Because it felt like this was a whole makeshift operation to keep Giannis, make Dame work. You know, they were trying to do all this stuff in real time, and it's hard to do that in the NBA.
I mean, this starting five is old. Mm-hmm. It is old. And can you really anticipate that things will get better moving forward? So if the Bucks do flame out, they are certainly in a position where they should reevaluate things and look for changes. The issue is that they don't have a lot of assets. And so that's where you get to the point with the Bucks. Are we in a situation here where they are out of time and that the window has shut? They need to turn it around this year. The window is open this year. Boston is going to be a 65-66 win team, but they are not unbeatable. The Bucks have to fix it. Like, this is the year. This could be the last year that you actually have a chance to contend.
Yeah, and the window closes very quickly, and it closes shut. Next game, KOC, Bulls-Knicks. Knicks plus four in this one. This is at home in New York. Total 213. What do we see in this
one? I mean, if you're the Knicks, you want to still try to hold on a home court advantage. Mm-hmm. With that great home crowd, I saw, like, Josh Hart and Jalen Brunson, some of those guys, with the Eclipse on
Sunday. Staring at the Eclipse,
We're tweeting about,
the Villanova Knicks. They have a strong brand power right now.
They're like, do we need to wear glasses? Thankfully, they did.
Yeah,
Thankfully, they did. They will not be out on Tuesday night with an eye issue. Thankfully, they were wearing their glasses.
Yes, shout out to them. But the Knicks are a fun team. Obviously, Julius Randle being out for the year is a big issue for the Knicks.
Big bummer for them.
Long term, but I do feel like there's some sort of level where I could see this team galvanizing together, maybe, you know, upsetting a Milwaukee or something like that. You know,
I don't think you can count them out.
Right.
I don't think you can count them out.
They're too Tibbs, good. Tibbs is Tibbs. Like, you know, we're watching a maniac in college win at the highest level with Dan Hurley. Oh, Thibodeau is cut from a, you know, similar cloth.
Keep your eyes on Hurley. That guy is wild watching him all game.
Yeah. I'm
he's a madman.
Yes, he was down to fight Zach Edey. It was David versus Goliath in real time.
He does not know how to have a poker face. That is for sure.
Definitely not.
Whether he's at the podium or standing at the court. Dude, yes. Can't hide it.
We know how he feels. And Tom Thibodeau, sometimes we know as well. Next game, Kings at Thunder. Thunder -5.5 in this game. Total 227.5. Who do you like here, KOC? And what matchup should we watch in this game? It's a fun game, Kings Thunder.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Thunder are the team you're going to pick here. The Kings dealing with all their injuries. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they're in a position right now. They're only a half game up on the Lakers. Currently, the Kings are the 8 seed, and they're only 2 games up on the Warriors for the 10 seed. Tough for the Kings with all these injuries. Like now they're in a position where they might not even make the playoffs. But hopefully, you know, for Kings fans, whether they make the playoffs or not, this is not going to end the way Kings fans would have hoped for, which is a step up from last year's first round loss. I think for them, regardless of the result tonight, you're in a position where maybe this step back ends up forcing some big changes this summer. And, yeah, you know, maybe it ends up being a blessing in disguise if the team didn't get to the same spot as last year.
And last year they were the talk of the town. Everybody was so excited. We light the beam. We loved them as the three
darlings.
Seed. Yeah, right.
They the were darlings the best of the stories NBA. In the league.
This year the Thunder just took that away from them.
They did.
Or even the Timberwolves, right? So there were two teams in the West that kind of jumped them there. Next game, we get Nuggets at Jazz. Jazz +14.5 in this game. The total is 225.
They're tanking their butts off.
Yeah, that is a tank line right there, KOC. Is there something to watch here? Does Nikola Jokic even have to show up in this game?
Well, the Jazz have lost 12 games in a row at this point.
Nice.
They are ready for the lottery.
Danny Ainge
is working. Ready for it. He's working hardest that he has all year right now. The Nuggets should win this game, obviously. They could probably win this without Jokic. The only question is, are they going to be able to cover this? It'd be a shocker if they don't win it, though.
I think they'll handle business there. Shout out to the Utah
and the Jazz.
Jazz,
by the way, a loss is a win.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's how the NBA works. Like, you're trying to either get down to the bottom or climb your way to the top. There is no middle ground in the NBA. Clippers at Suns. Suns -7. Total 226.5. Clippers, we're still trying to figure out who they are. Are they the team that we saw? We talked about this multiple times, but are they the team that we saw in the best version of themselves? Are they just who they are right now? Suns are an interesting team at this moment right now. -7 in this game. Total 226.5. What do you expect to see in this one?
Actually, a really big game because you have the Clippers right now, 2 games up on the Mavericks. Clippers are the 4 seed. They want to hold on to that home court advantage. And then the Suns are 2 games back from the Mavs as well to move up in the standings. So I think for both of the – and move up in the standings and avoid the play-in as well, which is pivotal because they're the 6th seed right now. The Clippers, I think they're in a position right now where I cannot trust them at all. Cannot trust the Clippers with the ups and downs they've experienced this year. And the Suns, you can say similar, but at the same time, when they've had their 3 stars in the starting lineup, they've been consistently good. It's just a matter of closing games. So this will be a big one against the Clippers.
Yeah, the Suns obviously put all their chips on the table. Ishbia, you know, was the talk of the town for a little bit of time there, and they have the stars there. So the Suns, I almost feel like they're kind of like a dark horse right now. Like, we're not talking enough about them considering the star power. Talking about star power, we got Warriors going to Los Angeles to take on the Lakers. Lakers -2 in this one, 234.5. Anytime we have these two teams matching up, especially on the West Coast, it is a big deal. KOC, what do you see in this game? Last game of our 6 previews in the NBA.
Just very, very excited to watch a Stephen Curry, LeBron James matchup once again. Those guys still playing at the level that they are. And, of course, it's a big game for both of those teams still in the play-in as well. Yeah, I mean, if they're the Warriors, in all likelihood, you're going to have to win 2 games.
If you watch SportsCenter, you would think these are the top 2 seeds in the Western Conference. But you're right. I mean, they're both playing for the 9 and 10 spot just to try to get in.
I mean, the thing is, though, Tate, despite the fact that those teams are playing for the 9 and 10 right now, you still can't count them out in a series against a young Thunder team, an inexperienced Wolves team in playoff situations with this group. You can't count them out considering the level of talent that they have. And the Lakers feel like a team that's really, really trending up right now.
Yeah, and the Lakers, we saw them do it last year. They went from the play-in to the Western Conference Finals, and Obviously, they got swept by the Nuggets, but getting there was an impressive feat, to say the least. So that'll be a fun game to watch. Kevin, where can we find all your work? And then we'll let you go enjoy your Tuesday, and hopefully we can get out of Phoenix safely.
OverTheRinger.com.
There you go, TheRinger.com. He is Kevin O'Connor. He's the best. On the other side of the break, we got the great Cousin Sal joining the show, and we are not going to talk about what happened in the national championship game. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Through the Ringer. Joining us now, you know what it is. It's Tuesdays with Cousin Sal's on the show. Sal, good to see you, man.
Great to see you, pal. I saw the first half of the show. You and KOC did such a bang-up job recapping last night's college finale. I don't even want to speak about it. But you bet. Serious? Let's not bring it up at all. I will leave if you do so.
Oh, man. So it is banned. We will not. It feels like BS is going to be happy about this. College basketball talk is banned from the show, so that's good. A good start here. Well, that leads us into our favorite game. Let's do some over-under reactions.
Yeah, let's do that. You ready? You love that. Yeah, do it.
All right, let's do it. It is Tuesday. You are watching us, and you just realized college basketball has crowned a national champion. So, Sal, I say to you, today is the second saddest day on the sports calendar, the day after the NCAA tournament. This is how I feel. Is that an over or under reaction?
I'm going to say, well, it really depends on the person. I'm going to say it's an overreaction if you're counting me. The saddest day is the day after the Super Bowl. For me, the second saddest day is when my wife goes into the bank account and sees how much money I lost betting on the Super Bowl. So those are one and two. It's probably the saddest for you, though, right? Although I want to put a bright light on this. People are going to start to leave you alone for a couple weeks now, right? Isn't that the thing? People don't care as much about your take on the Angels over-under win total, right? So it's good news for you.
It is a little bit of good news. You just hope that they remember you next time March rolls around. That's all it is. You know, it's a dangerous game, Sal. You go back behind the curtain. You hope remember. But I think they will. But it is sad. But we did have a great national championship game. But we're not going to talk about it. That's right. That is
right.
Bad.
Right. Well, I wish you luck in staying relevant.
Thank you. I'll do my best. Number two here, our over-under reaction. WrestleMania 40 was the best WrestleMania ever. What say you, Sal? Over-under reaction.
I'm an old idiot. I'm going to say overreaction. I was there at one. I thought WrestleMania 1 was the best. It actually set the wheels in motion, if you want. WrestleMania 1. There was a slam match between Andre and Stud. You had SD Jones pinned in 11 seconds to King Kong Bundy. Hogan and Mr. T cheated against Orndorff and Piper. I still have not gotten over that, but they did do a good job with this WrestleMania. It was really nice. You had the Bloodline, you had the Tribal Chief and Roman Reigns, who finally lost his title to Cody Rhodes, who finished his story, and I think he kind of started his story on Cousin Sal's winning weekend when we interviewed him. But good showing by the WWE.
Yeah, I loved it. I don't know much about wrestling these days, Sal. I did a WrestleMania preview, so I did my best to get up to speed. But I do like that the story is closed there, and I love that we got someone from, Cousin Sal's winning weekend getting a big W. So it's all good news. We love to see it. Next up, Sal, we already know the order of the first three NFL draft picks. Or let's look at the odds here. So Caleb Williams to go one, Jaden Daniels to go two, Drake May to go three. That is the favorite at +115. Is that an over or under reaction? We already know what it's going to be.
I'm hoping it's an overreaction, because I bet, and you could do this on FanDuel, Drake May to be the second pick overall. So I have to stick with that. I'm hoping that the Commanders grab him at +210 at the two spot. And then I'm thinking, there's been a lot of McCarthy talk, but I still think it's Daniels over McCarthy for third. I just don't see either of them on the Patriots. What is this? You don't want Drake May. He's your guy. You don't want him going to the Patriots. You don't want to root for that ridiculous team, right?
I think it would be great for me in my career. You talked about fading into the abyss. I think if Drake May's the quarterback of the New England Patriots, I got five more years at least, Sal. So I am praying to the football gods, and I'm saying, let's send Drake May to New England.
That is so terrible that you're probably 80% serious right now.
I think I'm closer to 90. That'll be good. Drake May, if you were to think Drake May would go second, J.J. McCarthy to go third, you could get that number +850. So there's some value out there. If you're a J.J. McCarthy guy. Next one, Sal. Edwin Diaz is the NL Comeback Player of the Year. You can get that number at +350. Overreaction or underreaction?
Get it ready. Get Timmy Trumpet out there, Tate. Yeah. Edwin Diaz, five innings pitched, one hit allowed, two saves, 0-0-0 ERA. Yeah, I don't know that you could come back. If you're the injury you come back from is as ridiculous as Edwin Diaz's was and his fault, I almost think you should be disqualified from the award. But I do like it at plus 350. I also like Trout at plus 450. Mm-hmm. Again, he had over 300 at-bats. So comeback is a little bit of a strong word, but I do like that. I like both those.
Yeah, I like that as well. Trout plus 450 does seem like some great value. And you got, you know, the story of the Angels without Shohei. I mean, I think there's some sympathy there. So I like it. Plus 450, great odds. Next up, Sal, the Rangers are New York's best chance for a title this year. If you're looking at the odds, New York Rangers, the favorites amongst the New York teams, plus 900. You got the Yankees plus 1,000. You got the Jets plus 2,700. And then it gets dark from there. You know, your Mets at plus 5,500. But what say you, Sal, over or under reaction about the Rangers?
I think it got dark from when you first brought this topic up. I don't like the Rangers. I hate them. I grew up an Islanders fan. Four cups in a row. That'll never be done again in any sport, four in a row. Yankees second up at 10-1 is even worse for me. Does Joey Chestnut count as a New York resident, as a New York?
I think so.
Shouldn't he at this point with Coney Island? Really? He doesn't have a place in Park Slope.
I think he's
at this
minus 150 to be a champion. So,
yeah, let's go Joey Chestnut. I'll go off the board there. And by the way, the last time I checked, Buffalo was in New York also. So
that is true. Yeah, there's a lot of times where the New York State versus the New York City, you know, conversation gets a little stretched out there. But yeah, I like the Buffalo Bills. Last one, Sal. Coach Cal. He is March Madness's biggest upset, deciding to go to Arkansas and leaving his job and his post at Kentucky after 15 years. Over or under reaction? What say you?
That's an underreaction. This was my reaction actually when I said it. I was like, what? Really? And then I had to look at my phone again. So that was my actual reaction. I'm not, you know, when I look at this, I'm like, why would he do this? Why would the team do this? I don't know why Arkansas would maybe do this, because Musselman came off a bad year and he obviously went to USC. But before that, Elite Eight twice and Sweet 16, definitely better than Calipari's recent resume. And why would Calipari do that? There's not an Italian restaurant, not that there was one in Kentucky anywhere close, but in Arkansas, there's a place in Rogers, Arkansas, the Olive Garden. Good luck getting C-plus pasta primavera there.
He can get a nice NIL deal, potentially. It does sound like your guy, Jerry Jones, was a big part of this, by the way. So owner of the Dallas Cowboys decided to step in and get John Calipari to come down to Fayetteville, Arkansas.
When your team has dominated NFL and, you know, you tend to want to move on to other sports where you can provide some, you know, some happiness.
You got Bill Clinton happy, the Tyson food chain, all that Tyson chicken. They're very excited. So big day for the Arkansas fans, and they're going to be whoop pig suing everywhere that you see them. So there you go. Sal, let's call up the Riverboat captain because we got a question here. This is a fun one after we saw the national championship game on Sunday. The question is simple, Sal. Where does Caitlin Clark end up? Right now, the WNBA is obviously the favorite at minus 250. The Big Three, who offered her $5 million reportedly, then Ice Cube walked it back, plus 200. A Ringer podcast host. Oh, man, this might be bad for me, Sal. Plus 2,000. the Iowa football offensive coordinator, plus 10,000. The field at even odds. What say you, Sal? Where will Caitlin Clark end up?
Oh, man, this is tough. I do like the Iowa football offensive coordinator. I don't think they've scored a touchdown since 2004 or something like that. But I do have to say, as far as basketball goes, I don't think we should confine her great skills to a court or a league or anything like that, whether it's WNBA or Big Three or whatever. She should be a trick shot artist, right? She's making shots from the concession stand as it is. Team her up with Dude Perfect or Mr. Beast and let her make $725 million a year and let her shoot from SpaceX or the top of the sphere or whatever in Vegas, and that'll be her thing. I'm thinking bigger for you, Caitlin.
I like that. That'll be tough for Lethal Shooter, but, you know, we'll see what happens, you know, in the new Caitlin Clark universe. I will say Lynette Woodard called her out a little bit. She was the first female Harlem Globetrotter. Maybe Caitlin goes to the Globetrotters and decides to take over and have a better career. Maybe she outscores Lynette Woodard with the Globetrotters. I don't know. She's got options, but I'm going to take the WNBA. Why not? Go be the number one pick. Go to Indiana. Sounds like her boyfriend's going to Indiana as well, so they're going to be happy in Indianapolis. So that'll be a great story for Caitlin Clark. Sal, I turn it over to you. Now you're going to set some lines for us.
Yeah, let me do this. Now, I just have to preface this. This is not anything you could bet on FanDuel, Tate. So don't even think of picking out your phone and trying to find this, because that's nonsense. I know all the smart people out there know this, but I have to reiterate here. How about this for you, Tate? Will there be another episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, 8-1 odds?
I'm going to take a yes there. I mean, maybe not an episode, maybe a movie, right? Because I think the first thing that he ever did was a film, you know, kind of about his life. And that was almost like the pilot for the TV series. And it led into the TV series. So maybe he comes back and does like a little feature film, you know what I mean? For HBO, HBO Films presents a Curb kind of story. But I think he will be back. I don't think he's done.
Okay. Well, he is 76, and these things do take a while to put together. It's great stuff, obviously. Odds are against it. But I would listen, I would like be it. Okay with a spinoff of Leon and Auntie Ray. I would watch the crap there out of that. Go. That would be
me
fun.
Too.
All right. Odds, Bronny James. You heard of this character?
Yes.
His first NBA coach is also the first coach fired next season. Minus 1,000. Wow.
I think odds it's minus 1,000, right? Because Greg Popovich, I feel like, is what he's being steered to. I do feel like there's a world in which they're trying to put Bronny next to Wimby. There's a chance LeBron could go and tag along and make himself a part of the Wembanyama story. We saw this with Oscar Robertson and Kareem Luau Cinder, I guess, back in the day, where he comes late in his career and helps them get over the hump and win a championship, a young guy. So I think that's a good call because Greg Popovich isn't going to get fired. So minus 1,000, you know, it would be tough for that number. But, you know, Bronny James, he's one for one, Sal. He got Andy Enfield to leave his job. So
that's
he's
true. Done it before. Yeah. He's done his job. But if he goes pro and they don't send him to the G League, that is a tough roster spot to eat up for Bronny there. Right. And for what? To be invited to Taco Tuesday by LeBron? I don't get it, really.
I love when you set the lines. It gets me excited. So good stuff. That was a fun game. Glad that we're playing some fun games here. We'll be right back on the other side, and we'll do some line look-aheads. Does that sound good, Sal?
That's a fun game, too. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Through the Ringer. We're still here with Cousin Sal. And Sal, you know what we always do? We look at lines and we look ahead at those lines and we make some predictions.
We always do that. So we're not, we're going to do something else, right?
Because no.
Was he going to do that again? Okay.
We're going to do the same thing. We're going to stick to it. And let's start here. Line look ahead. Team to draft Michael Penix Jr. Not Penix. Penix Jr. Mm-hmm. The favorite is Las Vegas Raiders at plus 380. The Vikings second there at plus 470. Broncos also at plus 470. What say you? What's the value here? And what do you see for Michael Penix Jr. style?
Well, I mean, I'm glad you're asking me. And it makes sense because I helped this guy's draft stock, right? Nobody considered him a first round. I don't even think he would have been in the CFL or something. Had I not at Radio Row there at the Super Bowl circled under his pass, and it took me forever. I think we have a clip of it here to get. Look at me trying to circle underneath that duck. What a wobbler. But that's what I do for quarterbacks. I've been doing it on Radio Row for years. I am going to go Vikings plus 470. I was thinking Seattle, but they don't have a second round pick, so they might address other needs. Same thing with the Raiders. Don't think they go quarterback first round. Vikings could also consider moving up at the end of the round, using one of their picks later on in the draft. They did this in 2014 with Teddy Bridgewater. Worked out okay. Penix with Addison and Jefferson would be dynamite, I think.
I think Minnesota, if you're one of these young quarterbacks, I think you're crossing your fingers and you're hoping that Minnesota wants you and they put you in a place where you can be their future franchise quarterback. So Michael Penix, if that were to happen, I mean, I know we mentioned the Patriots with Drake May, but if it worked out where the Vikings ended up trading up and getting Drake May, I'd be happy about that too, Sal. But
You'd have to find another job, but yeah, I guess you'd be happy.
I'd be all right. As long as Caitlin Clark stepped in and took over OSP, I think I'd be okay. So that'd be good. Plus 470, I like the Vikings there. Next one, Sal, a former Viking receiver, Stephon Diggs, to record 1,000-plus regular season receiving yards. You could get that number at minus 110. What do we think about Diggs in this new situation? Are we thinking over here, or are we thinking under?
I don't like it. It's Stephon Stink Eye Diggs. I think he's going to ruin poor C.J. Stroud, who obviously emerged as a great, you know, young quarterback. It's so rare that we have a nice young prospect now. If you look at the last four drafts or so, we're probably like 1 for 12 with quarterbacks. C.J.'s our guy, maybe 2 for 12 with Burrow. But Diggs didn't have a 100-yard game. I would go under this number, by the way. He didn't have a 100-yard game since week 6. He didn't have a touchdown in 7 in a row at the end and 9 of his last 10. And I'm not even including the Pro Bowl, which I don't know how he made in the first place. I'm not a big Stephon Diggs fan. Love his brother. Does good things for the Cowboys. A close source said He wanted to move to Houston because he wants a party. It's a party city. I think his head's already in the wrong place. I'd go under that number.
Yeah, I think James Harden has done a really good job at letting people know that the strip clubs in Houston are a hit. And I think people are happy to go to Houston. James Harden at one time trying to find his way there. The Bills are interesting without Diggs. Diggs without the Bills will be fascinating to watch. So, I think take the under there as well. We'll see what Diggs looks like. He could prove us wrong, of course. Next one, Sal, line look ahead. Favorite to win the 2024 Masters. This is going to be a fun weekend. We got some great golf there. Tiger Woods already kind of strolling down in Augusta, Georgia. The favorite, though, this week, the 2022 champion, Scottie Scheffler, plus 400. You get Rory McIlroy, the fan favorite, plus 1,000. John Rahm, plus 1,200. Xander Schauffele, plus 1,600. Brooks Koepka, plus 1,800. What say you, Sal? Is there anyone you like? And what's the best value here at Augusta?
Well, it's hard to get away from Scheffler. Have him somewhere because I've had success taking him top five over the last 6 weeks. That's a Brother Bry special, by the way, on Against All Odds. I'm going to go with Matsuyama, though, at 18-1, if I have to say anyone other than Scheffler. Tied for seventh last week in that Texas tournament. Tied for 20 in eighth, in the top 20 in eight of the last nine Masters. Pretty good and got fitted for a jacket, green jacket, in 2021. I'll be watching with the Sportsish guy and Joe House. I don't think you're invited. Maybe if Drake May goes to the Patriots, you will be invited. I don't think it's going to time out great, though.
Oh, man, I wish the draft was, Wednesday night, Sal. I might have a shot at getting that invite. I mean, fingers crossed. But, yeah, I do like that pick. I feel like it is a bit of a safe pick. I will say this. Harry of Against All Odds reached out to me. He knows I'm an avid golfer, and he was trying to give me some golf thoughts. And he texted me about a guy. He said Ludvig Åberg is the name to watch out for. He was told by a random stranger about a year ago that Åberg was the name to watch in golf. Åberg is now number 9 in the world. Harry was the first person on Åberg. You can, if you look up right now, he's plus 3,000, Sal. And Harry's like, if you watch the clips, he's like trying to send me Ludvig Åberg highlights. He loves his short game. He likes how he fits in at Augusta National. So if you feel like Ludvig Åberg and you believe in Harry, plus 3,000, Sal. I don't know if you've heard that one before. There's some good
value.
No,
I don't
there.
Believe in Harry. And I love that he's telling you about people who fit in. Of all people to discuss what fits, but all right. Well, good luck to Harry. Stay away from that, Tate. It's a bad influence.
Yeah, plus 3,000. He was going in to put in bets before he came over to hang out yesterday. He is one of the funniest characters. He also parked in the driveway halfway. He didn't pull all the way up. He was like, I didn't know if I should pull in. I just froze.
Keep in mind, he doesn't have a driver's license. That was taken away from him 15 years ago. So
yeah, no, he's just driving for fun now. It's not for business. Next up, Sal, UFC 300, the main event. Mm. Alex Pereira, minus 150. Jamal Hill, plus 118. What do you see here, Sal, and what do you like in UFC 300?
I asked Mikey Meatballs, our producer and UFC expert, I asked his opinion of the fight, and he said authoritatively Pereira, I think. Which is what he said. But no, I think it's a great fight. I'm going with Pereira. Hill's coming off an ACL injury, and he's going to get his calves smashed in and beaten to hell, I think. Pereira's looked great at 205, right, Mikey? Who'd he beat? Prochaska?
Yeah, Jiří Prochaska.
Prochaska, look at that. Jiří Prochaska. Too much power. I think he wins, if you want him, you don't want to take that number, 150, wins by TKO or KO plus 125.
Yeah, shout out to Mikey Meatballs for staying locked in. We have Chuck Mendenhall. He comes on the show, and it's basically me phonetically trying to pronounce these names in UFC. And it's a fun game.
Easy.
That's my third favorite game, not my first favorite game.
Go with Ludwig, at Harry says. It's amazing.
Ludwig Åberg, there you go. Next one, Sal, NBA, Warriors at Lakers. Lakers minus 2.5 in this game. The total, 232.5. This is always a good matchup between these two franchises. What do you see here and what do you like?
Well, this is the warm-up to the fun 9-10 game, which likely is going to be Warriors and Lakers. Lakers home. I have the Warriors to make the playoffs. I'm not proud of it right now. You know what? KOC and I are going to break this game down in the next half hour where you're not involved.
Oh, man.
You get him. You get me, and then we leave you. You know, you can go off and do whatever. You're not around for that part. But we are racing the 10. I don't care about the spread or anything else. The D3 and I are racing the 10. You could do it on Twitter. You could see us. Follow along. Who do we have, Mike? We have the Warriors as an underdog. It's a lot of fun. Three Steph threes, and maybe Clay shoots a technical, and we'll get to 10. You love race to 10, Tate.
I love Race to 10. I love chanting Race to 10. I like the whole idea behind Race to 10. And I do think, do you have a pick for Race? Is Warriors the pick for Race to 10?
Yeah, we have the Warriors. Okay. Yeah, the underdog okay. Warriors.
Slide so on. I will be watching this. I will be watching along, and I will be chanting Race to 10.
Yeah, who cares about the rest of the game?
Yeah, in my lonesome, so that'll be good. Let's track to the future here, Sal. We love to do this. MLB odds, we're talking Major League Baseball. It is that time of the year. Odds to win 100-plus games. We're going to look at some of the favorites here, Sal. I mean, the Dodgers are the heavy favorite, minus 240. Yeah. Braves right behind them, minus 114. Then we get into the plus money, New York Yankees plus 245, Phillies plus 420. What say you, Sal? Do you like some value here? What teams do you think can win over 100 games?
I mean, I like the Dodgers fine. I really just don't like any of these teams, right? I can't root for the Braves or the Yankees or the Phillies, even though I picked the Phillies to win the World Series. But how about the Orioles at plus 520? They're only hovering around 500 right now and after the first 10 games or so. But they have potential to bust out. The bats went a bit cold over this past weekend. They did score 24 runs in their first two games. Hayes, Mullins, they're going to bust out eventually. And how about that? Those arms, Rodriguez, Burns, and Kramer, over their first six starts have been dynamite, their first collective six starts. If you're going to take a chance on the team that had 101 wins last year, and you can get plus 520 for them to repeat this year.
I like that. Mally Rubin will be happy to hear that as well, an Orioles faithful fan.
That's
here.
Right.
So plus 520, some good numbers there. The Houston Astros are a team that are the bane of my baseball existence for the most part. So I would just take them plus 440 because they just typically win no matter what. So if I had to guess, I would say they get it done. Maybe the Rangers there plus 440 as well.
You and Mattress Mac have had this beef, and you've never been able to resolve it. It's so sad.
I usually can resolve beef, Sal, for the most part. But, you know, me and Mac, he goes way back. I got to get Harry involved. Maybe he could give him an Aberg pick, and we'll get it all handled. Last thing, Sal, before I let you go, the Tate debate. We always debate the hottest topics in sports. Right now, Sal, I say to you, Kentucky is still the best job in college basketball. Do you agree or disagree? Because this is a hot topic. Everyone's saying this is the number one job in the sport. Carolina, Duke, Kansas, maybe even UCLA, Indiana in that conversation. But if I say that to you, they're the best job in college basketball. Do you agree?
Well, this is best available job, right?
Well, best available, I think, right now.
Yeah.
Yes, of course.
Well, let me ask you this. The Indiana State gig is up there, but is Bobby Avila, he's gone, right? Is he gone?
Because Robbie's going to be going to test the waters.
He is?
Yeah, he's
going
to test the waters.
Oh, man, because I would say that's the best job because you get to hang out with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. But other than that, I would say the best college job is probably Kentucky. If not, Sister Jean's handler is good because if you can get in the will, she's got millions stashed away. And don't ask me how I know. I just know. Other than that, yeah, Kentucky.
Yeah, I think Kentucky's going to be a fun, interesting. We needed something in college basketball to get people's attention because the basketball, for whatever reason, is not doing it. So John Calipari, we appreciate him deciding to make himself the headline. That is always a good thing. Sal, you're the best. Where can we find all your work? Then we'll let you go enjoy your Tuesday.
We got Against All Odds podcast with a lot of those characters you mentioned, the D3, Harry, Brother Brian, Darren, the Parlay Kid. We're going to go over Masters picks, stuff like that, on Wednesday. And then Cousin Sal's winning weekend, Mark Jackson, you heard of him?
Yeah,
come on, break down some NBA stuff, and yeah, we're gonna have a lot of fun. We'll get him free breadsticks at the Olive Garden in Concord, Arkansas, wherever the hell I said.
That'll be great. And Cousin Sal's winning weekend, A-list group of guests, Sal, so shout out to you. Love to see you. It appreciate you coming on the show, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, buddy, have fun.